It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars. Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, especially on a day when Attorney General Jeff Sessions delivered such fantastic testimony to the Senate Intelligence Committee today and a very strong pushback against many of the narratives that we've been hearing for so long from the Democrats. And that is, well, that there was Russian collusion in America's election. I think there was Russian interference in the election. I think the Russians tried a lot of things. Did they actually succeed? Did they actually change the vote? Did they change any of the minds of American citizens? No. But now the Democrats have decided that this is a hobby horse that they can ride all the way to next fall's election in the fall of 2018. Meanwhile, there are other bigger problems that we may have to deal with. Defense Secretary James Mattis had some strong words for the Senate Armed Services Committee. He told them, "We're not winning in Afghanistan. Will we see a new surge of American troops sent back to Afghanistan, or do we just pack things up and head out and leave the place to become once again a terrorist haven?" Loretta Lynch gave Hillary Clinton a free pass and protection. That's what Judge Andrew Napolitano of Fox News had to say, and I agree with him. I think that based on the testimony of James Comey last week, Loretta Lynch did make sure that Hillary Clinton got a free pass. Just one more piece of evidence to start a criminal investigation into Lynch's involvement in the Hillary email scandal, investigation, and failure to prosecute. PTSD. You've heard the term before. You may even know somebody. I know at least a few people who have suffered from PTSD. It's one of the most common problems our veterans face when they return from war, but researchers have found a very simple solution. So it might make you wonder, why aren't we using it? And a Boy Scout leader has been arrested. Wait until you hear what happened. Oh, and please cast a vote in my quick poll. You'll find the question online at LarsLarson.com. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz has suggested the U.S. military might be used against Mexican transnational criminal groups who've been carrying out a drug war in the country to our south for the last couple of decades, leading to literally hundreds of thousands of people dead and a real danger to the United States of America. Is there any other way to answer that question? I don't think diplomacy has worked. The wall might be a start, but it's only a start. But what do you do when those Mexican drug cartels are so well armed that they are, in effect, paramilitary organizations unto themselves? You can find the quick poll at LarsLarson.com and is brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. It has the kind of conservative values I believe in. If you want to join, as I did some time ago, just go to amac.us. Join AMAC now. That's amac.us. AMAC's better. Better for you and better for America. Now, about some of those stories I just mentioned. I know that a lot of the focus the last couple of weeks has been on the Russia investigation. And I keep reminding you, we have found what about the Russia investigation and collusion between elements of the U.S. government and the Russians? Nothing. Do we think that the Russians wanted to mess with our election? Yes. Did they actually successfully do it? Don't know. They sure tried. Did they actually help get Donald Trump elected? No. Do you think this is more important? James Mattis told members of the Senate Armed Services Committee after the panel chairman, Arizona Republican John McCain, grilled the four-star general about what was going on in Afghanistan. Mattis told him, quote, "We are not winning in Afghanistan." The White House is reportedly weighing a 3,000 to 5,000 troop surge into Afghanistan at some point this year. But as you know, a small surge like that has not turned the trick in the past. Oh, and should there be a criminal investigation of Loretta Lynch? I think there absolutely should be. And Judge Andrew Napolitano, who is one of the Fox News analysts, says that He gave Hillary Clinton a free pass and protection, not Napolitano, but the fact that Hillary Clinton got a free pass from the then Attorney General, Loretta Lynch. The crime would be misconduct in office, the use of law enforcement resources for political purposes. Why is it we're hearing all about investigations of Donald Trump and not investigation of, say, Loretta Lynch for giving Hillary Clinton a pass? Is this because even some Republicans say, oh, let's let bygones be bygones. We don't need to keep troubling ourselves with what Hillary may have done or not done. She's old news. Well, I think any society that decides to pass on crimes that were committed right in front of God and everybody, like the crimes of Hillary Clinton, is not a nation of laws. It's a nation of men. Oh, and should women be able to be den mothers in Boy Scouts? A female scout leader from Arkansas has now been charged with sexual indecency with a child and possessing images of child sexual abuse. Christina McCaffrey, 38, only accused at this point of having an inappropriate relationship with a 15-year-old boy in her group. I would say that the Boy Scouts have fallen a long ways from their ideals. We know that they've had problems between scoutmasters, both male and female, and some of the scouts for decades. And now that the organization has decided to try and make itself as politically correct as it can, I think, unfortunately, that organization is not headed in a good direction. Now, let's go to Al, who's calling in from Bangor, Maine. Hey, Al, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars, if you would see the future of America, turn your eyes away from Congress in Washington, D.C. Pay attention to the trial of America's dad. What did America's dad do?
Bill Cosby,
you're
talking.
What's he accused of? Bill Cosby.
Yep. He's accused of sexual assault.
He's accused of sexual assault.
Yep.
And how does a man get an honorary doctorate? We're talking about the future of America. What's going to happen in this country? How does a man get an honorary doctorate when he gets a 400 total score on the SAT? That's like getting barbecue sauce on the SAT. How does that happen?
Yeah.
That's just a rhetorical question.
No, I hear what you're saying.
For some strange reason, my mind goes back to the trial of O.J. Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
You had this current trial of Bill Cosby. The deposition states he admits to the crime in those very words in the deposition. How long is it with the two jurors on there, which happen to be, I won't name what minority group they belong to, how long is it going to be before they come up with a hung jury?
No, well, I don't know. The jury's in its second day of deliberations. They continue to deliberate, and I don't know what their decision is going to be. It may be the kind of decision we got in O.J.'s criminal trial. You're absolutely right, and I appreciate the call. You know, Father's Day is coming up this Saturday. Speaking of dads, dads are super hard to shop for. The challenge is get him a great-looking gift, something that has to be useful and doesn't break the bank. Well, thankfully, this year there are Harry's shave sets, and there is still time to get Dad the perfect gift from Harry's. All you have to do is go to harrys.com. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S. And believe me, these are great gifts. Limited edition Father's Day shave sets, including the matte black razor handle, a chrome razor stand, Harry's moisturizing foaming shave gel. Believe me, I love them, and I shave with Harry's every single day. It comes in a sleek, giftable box with the option to add custom engraving and a personalized card, and that comes free of charge. Go to harrys.com right now and redeem a special offer just for fans of The Lars Show. Harry's will give you $5 off your purchase with promo code Lars, L-A-R-S. Don't wait. Father's Day is this Sunday. Time is running out right now, I can tell you. Order today, H-A-R-R-Y-S. That's harrys.com. Enter Lars at checkout to save $5. Get a great shave for yourself and for dear old dad as well. Back in just a moment. We'll talk about PTSD right here on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday night, and I'll bet most of us, speaking for myself, I know at least a few people who have suffered from PTSD. It's a controversial diagnosis. But I wanted to talk to Dr. John Huber, who joins me on the phone now. He's the chair for mainstream mental health, about a single injection that could get rid of PTSD, which so many of our service members have come back with after their service in the United States military. Dr. Huber, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Lars.
Now, this is a problem that we know today as PTSD, but it's really been around as long as there's been warfare, hasn't it?
Exactly. I think originally the first time we really talked about it was at the Civil War, and they called it shell shock.
And then, of course, we had it in World War I, World War II.
Right.
And it developed,
yes.
I mean, there were other names, but shell shocked was just sort of a general category that said this man or woman, generally men, they've come back and they're different than they were before.
Yes.
Sometimes different in a very disturbing way, sometimes different in just milder ways, right?
Correct. I mean, I've seen MRIs of individuals who were standing next to a bomb that exploded, and externally they weren't hurt, but the concussion from the explosion caused internal brain damage. You can see it on an MRI.
Is it also the case, doctor, that you can see a real legitimate case of PTSD where there's been no physical injury like you just mentioned, but just where this person has seen such shocking horrors that they come back to, or is that something different than PTSD?
No, that's part and parcel to it. And it can be immediately after, or weeks, months, sometimes even years after the actual event.
And there's a single injection that could address this?
Okay, yes, and it's part of a bigger treatment modality. It doesn't actually cure the PTSD. What happens is they start this fight-or-flight mechanism when they start experiencing the PTSD. They're reliving that actual event. And our sympathetic nervous system is what turns on that. So like if you were walking through a forest and you look over and you see a baby cub, and then you look on the other side and there's mom, and you're between the mama bear and the baby cub, you would all of a sudden, your sympathetic nervous system would crank up your heart rate, increase your respiratory system. It would redirect all the blood from your digestive tract and send it to your extremities so you could run or you can fight. And that's one of the things that happens with them, but part of them are still conscious and they're aware of their environment and they're not in a battle. So it creates this anxiety state, because why are they reacting this way when there's no threat? And what we've traditionally done is give them something like Xanax for that acute situation, but it can take a half an hour for that to go through. And what they're doing is they're using an injection of a type of anesthesia that's often used in surgery at the base of the neck, and it in the area where this sympathetic nervous system nerves are leaving the spinal column, and it deadens those nerves so it doesn't crank up the sympathetic nervous system. And it acts like the Xanax, only instantaneously. There's no wait for a half an hour for them to calm down. It just happens.
Doc, does that have to be given by a pro? Because, listen, I'd have a tough time. I'd be a terrible heroin addict because I don't even think I can give myself a shot.
I don't want anything near my spine. So, yeah, I would want it to be a pro for sure.
This has to actually go in by the spine. So if it's given once, does it end up stopping that fight or flight overreaction
for that one occurrence?
So what happens
if they
so you'd
if
have
they
to
have
give
it again
these,
later?
If they have it again later, they have to have it again.
Exactly. So, but what that does is it gives us an opportunity to calm that person down, and then we can start using some of the cognitive behavioral interventions that work for individuals suffering from PTSD, and they can learn to overcome it without having to have the shots all the time.
So that means, doctor, that once the person is seen, okay, this happens, but this blocks it, I learn how to maybe not intellectualize it, but deal with what it does to you emotionally, that you end up being able to solve that problem down the line in a way that you can address then when future PTSD occurrences happen.
Yes.
That's kind of what...
So this doesn't cure it. It doesn't cure it, no.
No, but it could address it in a meaningful way. So where does it stand right now as far as being able to be used on our vets?
Well, that's the... kind of the interesting thing, because it's already an approved medication. What's got to happen now for the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, to approve it is they got to run it through trials to make sure that it works for a large percentage. Statistically, it would be like the the main population. So over about 68 or 70% of the people, it will work on them more often than not. And then they'll approve it for this treatment. So and that's what they're doing. And they've allocated about $2 million in the budget for the VA to go through and run these trials. So probably within a year and a half to 2 years, we should have good data. And, you know, as a psychologist, that's what I want. I want to see that it works for most people and not for just some of the people. And based on the physiology and the behind it, it sounds like it's going to work.
Well, doctor, let me ask you this, because I have a friend I have on regularly, Dr. Henry Miller from Stanford. And one of his big bugaboos, he's worked at the FDA, he's been in academics, he's been in private industry, is the safe and effective standard, which sounds like motherhood and apple pie. The problem is,
right,
let's suppose it was only effective with one vet in five. Wouldn't it still be worth using, even if it's only because there are lots of drugs that are only effective for some people? Do we have to stick to the standard that it has to work for two-thirds of the patients?
You know, 20% is a big chunk that could be really beneficial.
Chunk. Yeah.
And you know, I know that there's a lot of medications that we use what we call off-label.
Yeah.
And that means it's not necessarily approved for that, but we know that it can be used for that in some situations.
Just to give people, I love to give people a practical example. You tell me if I'm wrong, treating acne with birth control pills.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so
that's a perfect example.
As long as it works, who cares why it works, right? As long as it works.
Well, as long as it's ethical and it works. I mean, I'm not going to try and fool my patients, but yeah, if they know that this may or may not work for them, but it does work for 20% of the people, let's use it. And you would know instantly. I mean, this isn't like you use it and 20 minutes later it still hasn't worked. Well, if it hasn't worked as the injection, I mean, it's kind of like a spinal for a woman having a baby.
Yeah.
And you're blocking the nerves. You're actually blocking the chemical transmission in the synapse with this medication. So the nerves turn off, essentially.
For
so you would know. I'm sorry?
For a while. And then
for a while.
Because it doesn't turn them off permanently, let's hope.
No. And it's not in the spine. It's the ones coming out, you know, so it wouldn't make it so you can't walk or paralyze your arms or anything else like that. But it would numb those nerves so that they're not sending the signals to increase your heart rate, to increase your respiratory system, to divert the blood flow from your stomach to your extremities, et cetera, et cetera.
Is there a way to speed up the approval? Because you got a lot of vets out there that are really, you know, they're going through a tough time.
Oh, man, I wish there was. I think once the research is there that the VA believes, you know, they'll, again, if the data is there and they're just waiting for FDA approval, I think we'll see a lot of VA doctors using it off-label like we just talked about.
That would be fantastic, because then you can have doctors actually engage in the practice of medicine, right? Isn't that what we want you to do? It's not an exact science. If it were, we'd replace all you expensive doctors with computers.
And we wouldn't call it practice.
No, because you'd be perfect each and every time.
Doctor,
I wish you well with this. I hope you can help some of those vet friends of ours who've suffered from this problem. Dr. Huber, thank you so much for the time tonight.
Thank you, Lars. I appreciate the opportunity.
Dr. John Huber, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. Coming up, in a shocking court case, federal prosecutors in Michigan exposed a doctor who mutilated up to 100 girls for so-called religious reasons. Does religion excuse that kind of abuse of young girls? We'll talk about it right here on the Lars Larson Show.
Opinion alert. It's honestly provocative talk on the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you. By the way, has a pop-up ever appeared on your computer screen flashing one of those scary virus warnings? It's probably the work of tech support scammers. They want you to call their toll-free number in a moment of panic. These con artists will demand payment for fake repairs or try to trick you into giving them remote access to your computer, and then they steal your data. The FTC reports that an estimated $25 million has been lost to thieves like this in the last 2 years. Identity theft is America's fastest-growing crime. You know that it happens when the thieves use your information to pretend they're you. They buy things on your credit. They liquidate bank accounts. They can even get to your retirement. LifeLock scans hundreds of millions of transactions each and every second. If they find your information, they send you an alert. If you have a problem, a U.S.-based agent goes to work to fix it. That's different than free credit monitoring. Just tells you there is a problem, but doesn't solve it. Nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor every transaction at all businesses. But LifeLock is the best identity theft protection around. I've had it for more than a decade. Membership starts at $9.99 a month, plus applicable taxes. Just go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use my name, Larson. That's Larson, for 10% off on your LifeLock Ultimate Plus membership. Visit LifeLock.com and save 10% today. Now, this next subject is so ugly. It is referred to, and I'll just say it straight out, female genital mutilation. And I've invited David Yerushalmi, who is an attorney at the American Freedom Law Center. I was going to call you doctor. David, thank you very much for joining us on the program tonight.
Thank you, Lord.
So I've been trying to cover this story for the last couple of years. It's very difficult to get anybody in the communities that are most affected by this to talk about it. It's difficult to get people in the medical community to talk about it. And while it's been going on for some time, earlier this year, just a couple of months ago, the first federal case involving female genital mutilation filed in the United States. Two doctors in Michigan and the wife of one of the doctors have been charged in connection with doing this. And we're talking about dozens or even 100 young ladies who've been hurt by this, children who've been hurt by this. And now, are we going to hear a defense of this, that this mutilation of children is going to be defended as a religious freedom?
You know, Lars, here's the interesting thing, and you called it ugly, and it's worse than that. The Center for Disease Control estimates in the United States that approximately 500,000 girls have been subject to female genital mutilation. Now, let's just understand what it is, but also understanding we're talking to a general radio audience.
Yeah.
It's where young prepubescent girls are taken to a doctor of sorts, sometimes an actual doctor, as in this case in Michigan, to reference, and their clitoris or other parts of their female organs are removed or sewn up so that they cannot have any sex or sexual pleasure when they become adults. It is a measure of control by the men in their communities and their culture over them for a lifetime. Now, in the past, we've known this has been practiced predominantly among Muslim communities around the globe. When we identified female genital mutilation as part of a sanctioned Islamic practice under Sharia, Islamic law, all of the Islamic apologists claimed it had nothing to do with Islam. It was a cultural thing that you saw it in India, even among Hindus. You saw it in Africa among various non-Muslim tribes. But the fact is that it's been predominantly practiced in Muslim cultures. And it has been sanctioned expressly by the leading Islamic legal authorities as either permissive or obligatory under Islamic law. Now, what do we find? The federal government, some time ago, passed a law outlawing female genital mutilation unless it's part of a necessary medical procedure. And the reason the federal government did so is because we know as a medical fact that it is harmful to the girls because it causes all sorts of medical issues, follow-on. It, of course, robs them of their own sexual integrity as they get older to make that decision. And so the federal government outlawed it. Many states have. Now that the three individuals have been charged, young girls came from Minnesota, and they had the operation, it was discovered, and they've been charged, and of course, many others are involved. And now, what is the answer? After the Islamic apologist told us it had nothing to do with the noble and peaceful Islam, now we're being told that, in fact, it should be a sanctioned Islamic religious practice. And what is the argument? The argument is it is akin to male circumcision practiced by both Muslims and by Jews. Well, has nothing to do with male circumcision. Male circumcision, first of all, most recent evidence suggests that male circumcision is actually helpful. It helps prevent various socially transmitted diseases. It helps prevent other issues, but it doesn't detract or rob the young boy from future sexual integrity. FGM absolutely does.
Well, in fact, David, isn't it the case that at one point, I know the number is an older number, and I think the number's changed a bit, but at one point, somewhat north of 90% of American males were circumcised, and it wasn't that unusual, and it certainly didn't prevent them from living healthy, productive, sexually active lives, right? So how do you compare that to something that is, you know, I've heard interviews with some of the young ladies who've been subject to this when they were too young to object in a meaningful way, and they're going to hurt for the rest of their lives from this.
That's exactly right. And, you know, a famous spokesperson on this argument, Ian Hirsi Ali, who came out of Muslim community in Africa, was subjected to this, ran away from home, made herself into a parliamentarian in one of the Scandinavian countries, it escapes me, then came to the United States after making a movie critical of Islam because her co-director was assassinated, and she is a major spokesperson on this issue. She's suffered it, and many other women have. The legal argument, I won't get too much into the weeds, that argues that it's a religious practice, says that, look, because it's a religious practice, the state and the federal government can't impose restrictions. Well, that's not true. First of all, if a law is a neutral, generally applicable law, it can, in fact, impose restrictions on any kind of religious behavior. For example, if someone wants to say that human sacrifice is a religious practice, it can be outlawed because we outlaw all murder. There was a famous case of a ritualistic chicken slaughter in a little town in Florida, and the city passed an ordinance that clearly, without saying it, was targeting their slaughterhouse as ritualistic as opposed to the regular chicken slaughterhouse. And there the court said, you're targeting a religious practice. If you want to regulate chicken slaughter, you may do so, but you have to do it similarly across the board, whether it's secular or sectarian slaughter. In this case, female genital mutilation regulation is neutral. It's for the health of the child, and it's generally applicable. It makes no distinction whether you're doing it for social reason, cultural reason, personal preference, or religious reason.
David, I appreciate you outlining that for us, and thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on. David Yaroslami, who's with the American Freedom Law Center. This is not a religious issue, folks. It's all about Sharia law. It's all about those Muslims who choose to mutilate some of the children in their families in a way that will affect them for the rest of their lives because of their religious beliefs. Coming up, one of the up-and-coming stars of the conservative movement, Tommy Lahren, joins me in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. In a couple of weeks, I get a chance to speak to a Republican group, and I'm always glad to say yes to those when I have the time on the schedule to be able to do it. But one of the people that I get the chance to share the stage with is Tommy Lahren, who joins me now, the Senior Communications Advisor for the Great America Alliance. Ms. Lahren, thanks a lot for taking the time today.
I am actually in the middle of Beverly Hills right now, in the middle of snowflake territory, but I'm happy to be with you.
Well, I'm glad, you know, you are in the middle of the snowflakes. I was going to say that when I saw that you were going to be on the stage and you were going to be speaking, and I'm just going to show up and say hi to folks, but you've had your share of interesting times the last 6 months or so. How's life treating you these days?
Well, I got to tell you, any type of hardship that I've gone through, it has been trumped if you will, by the fact that we have elected this 45th president. So anything that's going on, you know, pales in comparison to how excited I am about this administration and about the great things that are going on. And you know what? You're right. Very interesting times to live in, but, you know, never a shortage of content, which I'm sure you understand as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, it seems to come right and left, although a little frustrating. I mean, I watched Jeff Sessions today testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee. These are his former colleagues. But what's disappointing to me is that while America's all tied up in knots over things like whether or not the Russians had any intention to screw with our elections and whether or not Donald Trump had anything to do with it, which there appears to be no evidence of whatsoever after 12 months, we're not getting the really important things done that the Congress could be focusing on.
Well, of course not. And I mean, I think that it's really telling about, you know, the other side of the aisle, because whereas we're trying to improve infrastructure, and when I say we, I mean conservatives, Republicans, the Trump administration, we're trying to improve infrastructure. We're trying to put in place a travel ban to keep Americans safe and secure. We're trying to make sure that our border is secure. We're trying to make sure that our economy and our jobs, and we're working on tax reform, all those things. And it seems that the only thing that the folks on the other side of the aisle can do is read Trump's tweets and complain about Russia. So it's really telling of their party platform. I don't really think they have one at this point, to be honest.
No, it's really sad because we're watching the wheels come off Obamacare. We just found out the other day there are more and more counties around America who aren't going to have any health insurance provider at all next year. And the Democrats are saying, no, we have to get to the bottom of this Russia thing. And I'm thinking, do you think the person in that county that has no company he or she can choose from in getting their health insurance next year cares more about whether or not the Russians were trying to mess with our elections? They may well have been. But is that more important, or is that family's health insurance or the job they'd like to have? Is that more important?
Well, you know, it's a priorities problem. But beyond that, again, very telling of the Democrats and their platform. But just as they're doing what they accuse the right of doing with Benghazi. But here's the difference, Lars. No one died. So, you know, they are spending all this time, this money, this energy, trying to make some kind of a collusion theory, some kind of conspiracy theory. And that's what they lead every night's, you know, broadcast with. But they still haven't been able to do it. So when this finally does get over with, when they finally saturated the airwaves and they've spent all of our taxpayer money to get to the bottom of this, and there's nothing to get to the bottom of, then what do they say for themselves? So I think it's just important for us to just keep grinding away. We're not going to get the positive coverage that we're expecting, but, you know, sometimes it takes a workhorse, and we'll let them be the trick ponies.
I'm talking to Tommy Lahren, who's the senior communications advisor for the Great America Alliance, which is a pro-Donald Trump PAC, which, well, I'm a fan of President Trump. I endorsed him early on, and I'm glad that he's president of the United States. Let me ask you about this. You wrote recently about one of my favorite subjects lately, and that is Evergreen State University in Washington, where they've had all kinds of trouble because one group of students, people of color, decided that all white people should get off campus for a day. And a professor, actually a kind of a liberal professor, said, hey, that's not right. And he got all kinds of grief for objecting to their plan. And you wrote about that.
Of course. I was actually on with Tucker Carlson talking about that. And I've done some, you know, my infamous segments called Final Thoughts that are all over social media and discussing it, because it's so aggravating. I mean, like I said, there have been generations of great Americans that have fought to desegregate this country. And there's Beverly Hills behind me, that have fought to desegregate this country. And now we have a new generation of young people fighting to segregate it once again. And they're fighting on behalf of the left. And that's what's so sad here. And really, what a distraction from the educational process. What a distraction from all the things that these students should be focusing on. To have a day of exclusion, I can't believe this is happening in 2017. I really can't.
No, nor that the other campus professors apparently have taken the side not of the professor who was excluded for his skin color, white, but they've taken the side of the students, saying that somehow all white students and all white faculty should get off the campus for that one day. And now, I mean, I guess it's become so risky on campus, they literally had to move the graduation for the college to a community away from where the college is located, just to keep people safe.
Well, of course, and I think that the other faculty members there, I don't think they have an ounce of integrity, but I do think that they are, you know, they fear for their reputation, their jobs, and they're just fearful in general. I mean, it's gone from just being a play on words to just being actually violent at this point. So I think that they're fearing for their safety and their security, and it's a shame that their integrity had to go along with it. But what a hostile time to be on a college campus. You know, I say a lot, for conservatives, we've got a few battlegrounds, but college campus is certainly one of them, and it's one that we're going to have to tackle in the future.
Tommy, what would you do to change the situation on American college campuses? There's at least one conservative in Washington State who's a member of the legislature who says we ought to simply defund them and say if you can't provide a safe learning environment for people of all political backgrounds, then we'll take away your state money. Is that the way to go?
You know, I think that that's one, but I think also the conversation just needs to change. It needs to be a culture shift on college campuses. But you know what? On behalf of conservatives, we need to do a better job as well. We need to show up at these college campuses. We need to get our message out. We need to make sure that we are on the ground controlling the narrative, because for so long we have been absent from those environments. And so now we need to get back on. We need to get rid of the free speech zones. We need to get rid of all of these ridiculous restrictions on our First Amendment rights. But we also need to show up, and we need to do the work. And I'm going to put that on myself as well as the rest of us to do a better job of that in the future.
Now, have you had any trouble showing up on college campuses? Because some of my friends who are conservatives, folks like Ann Coulter and Ben Shapiro, have had a real, well, they get threatened when they plan to show up on a college campus.
You know, it's happened to me a couple of times. Luckily, I've been on some college campuses that have been very hospitable. I was at East Carolina University a couple months ago, and it was a great crowd. You know, I got some tough questions, and there were some folks around that probably weren't happy with me being there. But all in all, I think once they actually took the time to hear the message, they were pleasantly surprised. So for us, I think it's most important that we keep showing up, that we don't give up, and that we don't go away. Because if we do that, then they win. They control the narrative, and then we cower in the corner like we've done for so long. And I think we need to take a page out of the president's book and not do that anymore.
Tommy, thank you very
Absolutely.
Much. I appreciate your
thank
time.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Take care now. Back in just a moment. We'll get your phone calls and emails at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com.